Kim's story. While they waited for George to come back, Neville stared glumly into the fireplace as Lupin started in on 6 months' worth of stories Quentin had missed out on. Timothy and Teddy went outside to look at the dead vampires. Elizabeth kept sleeping, and John sat down next to his only worthy descendant and began badgering him loudly.
So, this is your girlfriend?
Please don't shout, Lupin said pleadingly. It's rather obvious this is my girlfriend.
She was at breakfast when you showed up at my house, Quentin commented. You remember, it was the day I didn't invite you.
John frowned, but did not look in Quentin's direction, apparently deciding it best to pretend he wasn't there.
She reminds me of that muggle girl you were always whining and carrying on about when you were a seventh year. Showed me a picture 900 times. Looks just like her. It's quite odd. Strange. Peculiar. Bizarre.
He gave Lupin a suspicious look.
Very odd indeed.
They're the same person, Lupin said wearily. It isn't odd at all.
Well,
John paused for a moment.
I seem to recall she married my most worthless descendant.
You've certainly got that right,
Lupin muttered, and John beamed.
Certainly I do. What's she done with that useless, drunken, miserable muggle sot, then?
Quentin couldn't help smiling at this.
They're divorced, Lupin sighed. Just go ahead and get to it, John.
Well, John looked quite insulted. I don't know what you are talking about. Although, now that you bring it up, this girl is obviously pregnant.
Lupin glanced over at Quentin and shook his head, and Quentin gave him a sympathetic look.
You think I don't know this?
Apparently you don't, since I haven't heard that you've married her,
John shouted triumphantly.
Whatever is wrong with you? I don't believe you were brought up to carry on like this.
And there it is,
Lupin said to Quentin.
He has arrived at his favorite destination, badgering me until I want to run myself through with my sword.
Well,
John apparently hadn't heard a word of it.
What have you got to say for yourself?
Be quiet, Lupin snapped. It's none of your business.
Well, you'd think you might show me some respect since I taught you everything you knew while your other worthless grandparents turned their backs on you.
He looked over at Neville, since he was pretending Quentin was invisible.
His own grandmother ran him off when he was 5 years old. Worthless! And his grandfather changed the locks on their house!
Neville looked horrified, but Lupin just shut his eyes.
Go get my sword,
he told Quentin. Weren't you an Auror? Quentin broke in. Remus says you're the one that caught Jack the Ripper.
Yes, I certainly was,
the old man proclaimed loudly.
He was a Death Eater named Relazar, and I was only 21 years old. And I know you are trying to change the subject,
he finished with satisfaction.
Now, this girl...
Aren't you the one that's a cartographer?
Neville said desperately.
That's right, John shouted. Nothing on this earth I haven't made a map of. Magical maps. Is there anyone you want to find?
Neville thought about this for a moment.
Well, sure. I'd like to know where my grandmother is, he replied, so I can make sure I never go there. Augusta Longbottom.
John waved his wand with a flourish, and a map of England appeared. When he tapped it and shouted,
Augusta Longbottom,
it zoomed in on Derbyshire.
She's at Wingfield Manor,
John said with satisfaction.
That's pretty good, Neville sounded impressed. That's where I grew up. My Uncle Algie still lives there. I figured that's where she'd go.
Longbottom! Now here's a fine fellow!
John gave Neville an approving look.
Killed that snake! Couldn't possibly have a descendant like him, could I? No, I've got to have a parcel of the most worthless creatures God ever put on this earth! Drunkards, thieves, malcontents, mediocre wizards, lazy scalawags, and irresponsible fathers!
He shouted and glared at Lupin.
I suppose one must cut him some slack, however. He's had a difficult life. Watched his sister get eaten by that wolf, you know. Couldn't save her. Felt guilty. Didn't have any friends. His father was a terrible wizard, and his mother was always depressed, gloomy, unhappy, wretched, sulky, miserable. Couldn't cheer her up. If you poured sunshine up her ass!
Will you never die?
Lupin asked John in a despairing voice.
Quit insulting his parents, Quentin snapped. Do you think his mother had a reason to be depressed?
Now his father was a fine fellow,
John continued in his usual fashion, as if Quentin had said nothing at all.
Very good fellow. Cheerful. Everybody liked him. Told a good story. Unfortunate that he was a worthless wizard. Very mediocre wizard. He was fond of me, however. Very fond. Affectionate, friendly, appreciative, admiring.
He said he wanted to throw you under a train, Lupin muttered, and he wished they'd never given me your name.
Remus John is a brilliant wizard, John proclaimed to Neville, since Quinn still remained invisible. Brilliant. Exceptional. Outstanding. Extraordinary. Genius. Nobody can take him on.
There's got to be some reason he's complimenting me, Lupin mumbled. Just give him a minute.
And it's all because his parents gave him my name, John finished triumphantly.
And there we go.
Lupin sighed, but did not argue with the statement. Wait a minute, Quentin said with a frown. You think that naming a child after someone gives it the person's characteristics?
Good Lord, Muggles are stupid, John yelled. It's hard to believe just how stupid they are.
Shut up, Lupin said furiously. They aren't stupid. We just think differently on certain subjects.
Yes, we've always believed that, Neville told Quentin quickly, mostly to keep John from speaking for a few seconds. There's been quite a bit of study done on it. It's pretty much proven.
That's ridiculous, Quentin replied disgustedly. How does giving someone your name make them like you? We don't really know. We just know that it works, Lupin replied. Sirius's mother meant for him to be named Imperius, a favorite black family name. Only the midwife was deaf and misunderstood her. So one day Sirius and I were going through all the black family history books. 900 years full of the most god-awful crap load of crazy evil fuckers. We find a black named Sirius in the 1500s who'd been in Gryffindor. The only one that wasn't a Slytherin. He was the black sheep of the family, so to speak, because he took up for the goblin and elf rites and eventually was killed by someone's jealous husband.
Well, that's why they can't decide on a name, Neville told Quentin knowingly. Elizabeth's got this baby book, and she's picked some names out of it she likes, but she says she can't even look at it without him having a big fit. Lupin made a horrible face at him.
Well, honestly, picking a name for a child out of a book? Who ever heard of something like that?
No one with a brain, John replied. Obviously, this girl has no brain.
Don't you dare insult her,
Lupin snarled, and John scowled ferociously at him.
Well, don't get all wolfy on me. I want some tea and a nap. Watching that girl you've knocked up sleeping is making me tired,
he yelled irritably. Wolfy? Neville said disbelievingly, and then started to laugh.
Good God, Quentin shook his head. How in the hell do you not strangle that old motherfucker? I've no idea, and he's never going to die,
Lupin responded gloomily and turned back to John.
And quit reading my mail. It's rude as hell.
I have no idea what you're saying, John looked pointedly up at the ceiling. None whatsoever. It's utter nonsense. Rubbish. Codswallop. Gobbledygook. Claptrap. Hogwash. Obviously, you are an idiot.
Liz.
Lupin poked her a bit, and she sleepily raised her head.
What? Give me a kiss so I'll have something to live for.
Elizabeth smiled and kissed him. Oh my God, Quentin barked out as she put her head back down and promptly went back to sleep. How pathetic was that? Lupin just smiled at him.
Remus John has no pride whatsoever when it comes to that girl, John announced. You two had better thank your lucky stars you went around when he was a 7th year. He got an owl from her at dinner and he sat and stared at it with this stupid smile as if he were petrified. I wanted to vomit up my turkey. Even his own father said that he was pathetic.
He did not, Lupin snapped. You're making that up.
He said you were obviously crazy about this girl. It's the same thing.
No, it isn't, Neville yelled out disgustedly. And if he's the only one of your descendants who isn't worthless, why do you try to aggravate him so much?
Never had much use for Frank Longbottom,
John declared, being careful not to turn his head to acknowledge Neville had spoken.
Squirrely fellow! Up to no good. Sneaky. Sly. Devious. Shifty. Underhanded.
He sat back and closed his eyes.
He has to aggravate me. It's what he lives for, Lupin told Neville in a weary voice. This is what's kept him alive for so long. The pleasure he gets from tormenting me.
Let's drag Tim in and hear the story, Neville whispered. That'll shut him up for a while. At least keep him talking about something besides you. Then he'll take his nap and you and Elizabeth and Teddy can make a break for it.
Lupin mulled this over.
Not a bad idea. I've done it before. I climbed up a 50-foot tree once to get away from him.
Neville smiled at this. Didn't your parents yell at you?
This happened last year.
He opened the front door.
Tim, get in here and tell this story, will you? And get away from those vampires,
he added disgustedly. Timothy came bouncing cheerfully through the door.
Where's George?
We're not waiting on him any longer,
Lupin said shortly.
Get on with it.
Timothy opened his mouth, and John immediately interrupted him.
Well, he shouted loudly and stared at Lupin. When we got there, you and that Severus Snape,
he frowned at Quentin, as if to remind him he still found them two peas in a pod,
were shouting at each other, and Timothy's mother took some food and a thermos from Aberforth and left.
We knew she was going to the shack, Timothy shrieked, and that's where she went. And George and Fred were under the invisibility cloak, and they followed her.
Very badly behaved, John pronounced. They were meant to be in school. Worthless.
Nobody cares about that, Timothy blurted out rudely.
So she goes to the shack and pulls this goat's milk and some food down his throat, but he could hardly lift his head. I guess she'd found him and was worried about him. Then George and Fred started fighting because Fred said they'd better go back to school, but George wouldn't go,
Timothy announced dramatically.
Horribly behaved. Worthless. Off goes the Fred fellow, and George follows Timothy's mother under the invisibility cloak,
John intoned sternly.
And then he looked in the window and saw Sirius lying there looking dead, and I guess he got worried because he took off the cape and went in.
Timothy gave John a ferocious look.
This is my story. Well, who went with you, young man? I suppose you can time travel on your own.
Lupin seemed very puzzled by this.
George has never said a word about it, he frowned. That's very odd. He definitely would have told me if he'd found Sirius in the shack. He and Fred were the only two students at Hogwarts that knew I didn't think he was a murderer. I didn't even tell William or Harry. Albus made a big fuss over us keeping it secret. But those two overheard Arthur and I talking about it one night. Extendable ears, I guess.
He and Mum were trying to help Sirius.
Timothy ignored Lupin and gamely soldiered on.
George would prop him up, and Mum would try and get him to eat. Mostly, he just slobbered it all down his shirt, he added. And at that point,
John gave Timothy a nasty look,
George had a bottle of fire whiskey, mind you, underage drinking, disgraceful. He and Timothy's mother began drinking from the bottle and went in a room upstairs.
John paused as Timothy tried to open his mouth.
Seen and not heard. Children should be seen and not heard. Timothy's sister followed them upstairs, and apparently there was a small room with some cabinets.
I know the room,
Lupin said impatiently.
Finish it up.
He glanced over at Quentin, who had put on his inscrutable look.
Well, it wasn't George's fault, Timothy said hotly. He was 15, and my mom jumped on him.
There was a stunned silence in the room, and Timothy looked satisfied.
We went forward a day, John shouted. It was getting very tiresome, and we find the boy carrying on and bawling in his bed at school, because he'd taken advantage of this confounded woman, and he knew it. Worthless! I'm surprised he isn't one of my descendants.
He felt really bad, Timothy snapped at John. He felt really bad. Kept talking about the Gryffindor Code of Honor. The boy's twin brother and William,
John frowned at the mere mention of his worthless descendant's name,
couldn't get him to tell them what was wrong. They got worried, you see, that something had happened to him on the way back from Hogsmeade. Thought maybe he'd been attacked. So off they go to bother Albus, who was trying to speak with the Minister of Magic.
And then they busted right in and started yelling at Dumbledore that he'd better come help George, quick. Fudge was really mad,
Timothy said happily.
But Dumbledore ran right out and talked to George by himself and got him to confess.
Lupin was shaking his head.
Albus didn't know anything about that. He'd have told me. He was quite convinced it was Malfoy as well.
Let us finish,
Timothy told him sternly.
George felt so bad he said he shouldn't be Gryffindor anymore because he'd broken the code of honor. You could tell Dumbledore felt sorry for him because he kept telling him it was just an unfortunate turn of events. But he kept on and finally Dumbledore told him he'd obliviate his memory. But George said that Dumbledore would always know and he'd think he was a horrible person. I think Dumbledore was getting kind of tired of it.
Timothy paused to take a breath.
He just wanted to go have his tea,
John shook his head in disgust.
Albus kept saying it was tea time.
So, he tells George he'll fix the whole thing up, and he calls Flitwick in there and tells him he wants him to obliviate his and George's memories of the last 24 hours and make Flitwick swear an oath never to tell either of them about it. That's why they didn't tell you, because they didn't remember,
Timothy told Lupin firmly.
Disgraceful, John snapped. Misuse of the obliviating spell. It isn't to be used to wipe out unpleasant memories. I don't know what Albus was thinking. It's against the law.
Tell it to the Wizengamot, Lupin told John irritably. They can dig him up and give him a fine.
I think it was brilliant, Timothy announced.
After Flitwick did the spell, George didn't remember anything, and neither did Dumbledore. He didn't even know why he was in there talking to George, and neither did George. Me and Rosie thought it was pretty funny. So George started pretending to be sick, and Dumbledore started giving him a big lecture about how he shouldn't have overflowed those Slytherins' toilets. Then he got out of there really fast.
Well, Lupin said thoughtfully, that adds George to the mix. But how do we know there wasn't anyone else?
"John sped up the time," Timothy grinned delightedly, and John beamed at him. "It was totally ace. We could see Mum for the rest of the week, but it was like watching a DVD on fast forward. She hung around that shack with Sirius and went to Aberforth and got him food and stuff."
"What do you mean by stuff?"
Lupin demanded.
"Well," John harumphed, "Timothy's sister told us there was some rumpy-pumpy going on later in the week. Apparently he was feeling better,"
he finished disgustedly. "So we don't know," Timothy yelled out, apparently realizing this was the only way to be heard above John.
"Which of them it was? Malfoy or George or Sirius? But we figure since they got in Gryffindor, it couldn't be Malfoy."
"Well, that isn't necessarily true,"
Lupin frowned. There was a crack, and George reappeared from the fireplace.
"Don't miss the story," he said cheerfully and sat down, propping his boots up on the table.
"Who'd your mom shag, then? The old goat man? Barty Crouch Jr.? Fudge!"
He glanced over at Quentin, who was giving him a deathly stare.
"Sorry, forgot about that," he told him amiably.
"Anyway, she was confounded. She didn't know what she was doing."
"We aren't sure who it is,"
Lupin said clearly, giving the rest of them a meaningful gaze.
"We've narrowed it down a bit, though. Neville, what about DNA testing?"
George looked puzzled when Neville's face flamed up like a tomato.
"Well," he hesitated, "it's easy enough for someone who's alive. You can just get a hair from them and one of Tim's and send it off to genetics lab. I could send it to Cornelius. He's that old muggle fellow I studied genetics with. He could look under his microscope and tell you in about 2 seconds.
"But what about the dead people?" Timothy yelled.
"Who could it be that's alive?" George frowned and then glanced over at Lupin.
"Well, I mean, maybe it's none of my business," he added hastily.
"It wasn't me," Lupin said firmly. "It would bother this fellow if it came out. He felt very badly about it afterwards. And there's no reason for that to happen unless he turns up the father. He doesn't remember it. He's had his memory obliterated."
"So you're just going to sneak up on him and pluck out one of his hairs?" George asked interestedly.
"I'll do it. I'm really sneaky.
From living with Mum," he added.
"I'll do it," Lupin replied, "and it won't be that difficult."
"We don't have any DNA on Malfoy," Tim shouted, frustrated. "We can't just dig him up out of that Malfoy burial ground. It's cursed," he shuddered. "I looked it up. It's the most cursed graveyard in the whole world."
"Well, that is true," Lupin said thoughtfully, "but I don't mind digging him up. It'd be nice to have some help, though. It'll take a while."
"No, thanks," George made a face. "And you're crazy. Anybody that goes in that graveyard after sunset never comes out alive," he said ominously.
"You're exaggerating," Lupin replied disgustedly. "At least half of them do."
"I want to go,"
shrieked Tim. "You are not going," Quentin growled.
"I'll go with you, Remus."
Neville was quite relieved to hear this pronouncement.
"Well, what about the other dead one?"
hissed Timothy.
"He fell through the veil."
"Aha, Sirius," George grinned. "I should have known. Wasn't he still in Azkaban, then?"
Lupin ran through the timeline, and George looked impressed.
"Well, that'd be cool, Tim," he said cheerfully. "Sirius was a marauder and a Gryffindor, and he was great. We were at Grim Old Place. I used to drink fire whiskey with him when Remus was off on assignments, and he told me a lot of good shit," he added triumphantly.
Lupin gave him a sour look.
"What about fingerprints? I've got his old school books,"
Lupin asked Neville.
"Too old," Neville said dismissively. "Even if you or Harry have something nobody's touched but him since he died, that's still 8 years ago. After a year, it's pretty worthless."
Timothy stomped his foot angrily.
"How am I going to know?" he wailed and gave Lupin a desperate look. "How?"
"We rule out Malfoy," Lupin said calmly. "If it is him, no need to bother the fellow who's still alive and would feel rather badly about it," he emphasized. "If it isn't Malfoy, we check out the fellow who's still alive, and if it's not him either, we know it's Sirius."
"I think we should bother the fellow who's still alive," George announced happily. "Honestly, shagging a confounded person? I bet it was Percy. That's the only way he'll ever get any. I'll tell this fellow. He'll never hear the end of it," he finished cheerfully. "I'll tell Rita Skeeter.
It wasn't Percy," Timothy said loudly.
"So, what does one bring to a haunted graveyard?" Quentin asked Lupin dispassionately. "A black cat? Bags of garlic? Lots of crosses to dangle around your neck?"
"A priest," Lupin told him. "We should bring Peter."
"Can't we just say the power of Christ compels you or something?" Quentin smiled.
I'd hate to make Peter stay up all night in a graveyard. I say we bring Lucretia. She'd love it. And there's no devil in hell that's going to mess with her ass.
You might have something there,
Lupin replied thoughtfully.
She's definitely a spirit-filled person, and she won't be afraid. You've got to keep them on the defensive. You can't let them smell any fear. None at all. They're like Dementors in that way. Probably will be Dementors there, actually.
Quentin was rather disturbed by this pronouncement, but covered it with his impassive look.
I guess I'll be able to paint them better, then, he mused, presuming they don't suck out my soul.
They're the least of our worries, Lupin said dismissively. I'll have my wand. I can clear them out. It's just the demons we need to concern ourselves with.
Oh, is that all? George said pleasantly.
Smashing, Quentin muttered. This is starting to sound like a bar joke. A werewolf, a muggle, and a fat black lady all go into this haunted graveyard.
Why are you saying you'll go? Timothy demanded and looked at Quentin.
Because I'd like to help you, he replied calmly. This is very important to you.
Thanks, Timothy started sniffing, and finally broke into tears.
Thanks, Uncle Quentin. I'm sorry I've been so mean to you. I guess you do like Lupin after all.
Certainly I like him, Quentin smiled. I like him more than anyone else I've known. And you can call me Quentin, he added mildly. I'm your stepfather, you know.
Okay, Tim burst out. Honestly, thanks. And I hope those demons don't kill you in that graveyard.
Well, I appreciate that, Tim, he replied dryly.
We need to leave by 4 if we don't want to be there at night, Lupin told Quentin. And don't forget Lucretia.
Don't forget your wand, Quentin replied.
Over here,
Lupin hissed to Quentin and Lucretia as they made their way through tall piles of weeds and brambles.
I can't see nothing, Lucretia grumbled. My shoe's getting all muddy. How you know where we going?
I can smell it.
What, is stink there? I don't want to go to no stinky graveyard. They must have them bodies dug up or something.
It's not that it smells badly. It's evil. I can smell the evil.
Quentin started laughing. That sounds like a line from a very badly written horror movie, he grinned. I can smell the evil.
Well, that's the only way to put it, Lupin said darkly. Evil has a smell. I've never found a Death Eater yet that can disguise themselves from me. They've got a smell of innocent blood on them that doesn't ever come off.
Well, I'm glad we've patched it up, Quentin said cheerfully. I'd forgotten what a fun fellow you are.
Oh, sod off.
Lupin stomped up ahead of them to a hill that finally broke open into a clearing, revealing the graveyard above. There were headstones of different sizes and configurations, and trees that all seemed to have broken or severed limbs. Although it was still quite sunny out, the area within the graveyard was shadowed in a deep gray gloom. Large wrought iron gates covered with satanic symbols blocked off the entranceway.
Lovely, Quentin remarked and leaned on his shovel. This place is charming. We should have brought a picnic.
What's that mean?
Lucretia pointed to an inscription written in Latin that hung suspended in midair above the gates.
Something along the lines of that bad horror movie you were writing. Lupin smiled at Quentin. Abandon all hope, ye who enter here.
You're kidding! It actually says that!
Quentin laughed again.
It does.
This is great! He said with a smile. How's it people don't come out of this graveyard?
Well, they get scared, Lupin sighed. You can't get scared of a demon. Then they can kill you.
I'm afraid of no demon, Lucretia announced, her eyes flashing. I say by the blood of Jesus, they can't do nothing to me.
You're quite right, as far as your soul is concerned, Lupin replied. They can't touch your soul. They can kill your body, though, if they're of mind to, and if you're afraid. The trouble with most people that come in here is, well, they're afraid, and, well, the demons are generally of a mind to kill them.
Open up those gates, Quentin barked. He'd already decided Lupin was making the whole thing up. Want to see one of those Dementors?
You really don't, Lupin thought to himself, but tapped on the gates a few times without results.
Stand back,
he said in a resigned voice, and the other two backed up about 15 feet.
I'll increase the fiendfire!
A ball of fiendfire appeared above their heads, forming itself into the shape of a cross, and blasted through the gates, shaking the earth so violently they all fell to the ground.
I can't get up, Lucretia grumbled. How you make that fire cross? We needs one of them at our church. Yes, so we does. My pastor, he be liking that. They're bringing some new peoples. We need some money for the building fund.
Yes, so we does.
Tell your pastor to call me, Quentin snapped. And why are you making a Christian symbol out of cursed fire? He added as they stepped carefully over the broken metal pieces of the gates. Isn't that a straight to hell? Fiend fire isn't really cursed fire, Lupin said in his professor's voice. It's called that because it sounds dramatic and frightening. It's basically fire that has properties your average fire doesn't. Some people have used it with bad intent, thus earning it the name cursed fire.
You're saying fiend fire is misunderstood, Quentin said in a serious voice. How awful for it.
Well, it is, and it's dead useful, I can tell you that.
Elizabeth sent Solange an email once saying you were obsessed with it. Lupin looked disgusted.
That's because I accidentally torched up one of her cats.
What? Quentin looked horrified. You killed one of her bloody cats?
I didn't kill it, Lupin replied crossly. I know how to put fiend fire out. It was perfectly fine. Just had a few singed whiskers, and she carried on about it for hours.
Damn, Quentin shook his head. I was wondering how you'd put up with her. I can't imagine she's stayed with you for this long.
Neither can I,
Lupin replied cheerfully. I suppose she really does love him, Quentin thought to himself. I really am an ass.
Not all the time,
Lupin said pleasantly.
Only now and then.
Damn it, Remus, stop that shit!
Sorry,
he said guiltily.
You should have let me know it bothers you. I really don't even do it that often.
Don't do it ever, Quentin shouted.
Well, if you'd ever tell anyone how you feel, I wouldn't have to read your bloody mind.
Quentin stopped and stared at him. There's so many things wrong with that statement. I don't even know where to begin, he barked.
You're right. This place cursed,
Lucretia announced as she glanced down at tombstones with pleasant inscriptions such as, born to live a life of pain, raised to burn in hell again, and graves that were covered with dead rats and human hair that had grown out of the ground.
Ugh, it's a load of bunk, Quentin said irritably. It's a car full of bollocks, I'm telling you.
Quentin's pissed at me,
Lupin announced cheerily to Lucretia.
That's why he's starting to sound Scottish.
What are you so pissy at him for?
Lucretia asked Quentin.
He the one gonna keep us safe from this stuff.
That aggravated Quentin even more.
Let's just find this damn grave, he yelled out and strode off ahead of them.
He stopped rather abruptly when he felt something moving in the muddy ground beneath his feet and stared at a mottled purple hand emerging from it.
Honestly, this is too much. Somebody's done this up. It's a load of... The hand jerked his leg down into the dirt below, where he felt thousands of writhing maggots slithering around his pants leg and crawling into his sock.
Fuck! He shouted. Get your ass over here!
Lupin darted up the hill with Lucretia puffing behind as Quentin felt his second leg going down.
Get me out of here! He yelled. This fucker's pulling me down into his grave!
Filialdo!
Lupin shouted, and Quentin felt himself rising slowly until he was above the ground.
Walk away a bit.
No doubt, Quentin thought, and walked a few steps off to the side.
Who's done this shit up? He snapped. Got fucking maggots crawling in my socks. It's damned annoying.
It isn't done up, Lupin said patiently. It's actually cursed. There are about a million stories of all the weird shit that's happened to people in here.
It's a pile of crap, and we need to go to the other side of the graveyard.
They'd already passed by at least 100 Malfoy graves, most from the years 12 and 1300.
This is medieval shit.
That's a long way, Lucretia panted irritably. A long way to walk. Can you apparate us over there?
Lupin looked shocked.
You don't apparate in a graveyard.
Why not? Quentin demanded.
You just don't. It isn't done. It's disrespectful of the dead.
The fuck do they care? They're dead. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Well, I don't know.
Lupin frowned.
I was in a graveyard with Albus once, and he wouldn't apparate.
He didn't know everything, Quentin snapped. Send us over there. What's going to happen?
I guess that's what we'll find out, Lupin thought, and watched them disappear. He apparated himself next to where they stood, in front of an enormous tombstone that was taller than Quentin.
You dare to disturb our slumber!
Shrieked an unearthly voice, and something began to howl.
Kill! Kill! Kill!
Came a few chanting voices from behind them, and a bolt of lightning split the sky.
Oh, good God! Quentin shouted. Could this be any more like a bad horror movie? Somebody has done this shit up! It's like that damn Living Dead room!
No, really it's not,
Lupin said quickly, and four demons, who rather resembled humans without skin, stepped into their path.
Who disturbs our graveyard? Answer us!
Just some idiot in a costume, Quentin replied impatiently. That or some transfigured toad or something.
Lupin sighed. Why the fuck did I bring a muggle to this damn graveyard? Two of the demons leapt on Quentin and wrestled him to the ground.
Albonessa!
Lupin shouted, and a brilliant burst of sunlight shone down on the scene. The demons screamed angrily, but did not let go of their prey.
Get out your cross!
Lupin hissed to Lucretia.
Stop praying!
You pray! I
sing," Lucretia announced cheerfully. "Oh, I'm gonna praise the Lord. Oh, I'm gonna praise the Lord Jesus. I'm gonna praise the Lord Jesus today. He done saved me from my sin, and he rose himself again. I'm gonna praise the Lord Jesus today."
She began clapping her hands and swaying, and the demons dropped Quentin and fled in horror.
"Praise and worship," she said to Quentin and Lupin, who were staring at her in amazement. "Ain't no devil in hell can stand that. Got to be praising the Lord all the time. Then no devil can bother you."
She picked her way haughtily to the next grave.
"We getting closer. This one from the 1900s.
Quentin did not move.
"All right," Lupin said to him worriedly.
"This place is real."
"Well, yes."
"Those really were demons."
"Yeah. I could smell that evil, Mr. Lupin."
"Yes, sir, I sure could. You right about that."
Quentin, who had smelled it as well when he was wrestling with the gruesome creatures, reminded himself quickly he couldn't be afraid in this graveyard if he ever wanted to get out of it.
"Well, keep looking then," he shouted at Lucretia and started striding around. He really wanted to find the grave and start digging.
"They didn't."
Lupin had stopped and was staring at a tombstone with a furious expression.
"They did not."
Quentin came up behind to take a look. Bellatrix Black Lestrange was written on a coffin-shaped headstone, and tiny rivulets of blood were running through the grooves in the marble where her name was cut.
"How'd she end up in the Malfoy graveyard?" "I suppose they wanted her. Harry wouldn't let them put her in with the Blacks," Lupin hissed. "She killed Sirius."
Quentin did not like the expression on Lupin's face.
"Well, come on, then," he gestured. "This isn't getting us any closer to Malfoy."
"Bitch!"
Lupin suddenly snarled and spat on her grave.
"I don't think that was a good idea,"
Lucretia said in a worried voice.
"No, sir, I don't."
"Bring her up, then,"
Lupin shouted at the tombstone.
"Come on up, Bellatrix. Get up here and fight me."
"Remus, stop that shit."
Quentin grabbed his arm and started dragging him to the side as Lucretia clucked disapprovingly. The earth trembled, rocked, and shook so violently that they all fell to their knees, and Quentin heard the sound of tombstones smashing to the ground throughout the cemetery. A huge black cloud suddenly blocked out every bit of the gloomy gray light.
"For God's sake, put on a light," Quentin told Lupin.
"Put on a light,"
Lucretia screeched.
"Won't do any good. It's Dementors,"
Lupin replied calmly.
"Get behind me."
Quentin saw the outlines of dozens of huge hooded shapes with outstretched, rotting black arms and felt an icy blast of cold that seemed to burrow straight through to his soul, and his chest felt crushed by a weight of depression and gloom worse than anything he'd ever imagined. "I'm going to die in this damn graveyard, and I'll never see Solange again or make it up with Rosie."
"Expecto Patronum!"
Lupin shouted.
"Jesus is Lord!"
Lucretia shrieked. The Patronus split off into a flock of seagulls that swooped around the Dementors until they screamed with rage and flew off.
"Ha!"
Lucretia was grinning broadly.
"They tried to scare me, but they couldn't. Ha, that's the power of the name of the good Lord Jesus. Hallelujah. Thank you, Jesus."
Quentin, who felt absolutely sick and was bathed in a cold sweat, decided he might visit Lucretia's church next Sunday. He put his arm on a tombstone to steady himself.
"Well," he snapped at Lupin, who was staring at him, "haven't you any chocolate, for fuck's sake?"
"Shut the fuck up," Lupin replied angrily. "It's your own damn fault."
"What are you talking like that for? Ain't no reason to act like that. Ain't no—"
Lucretia scolded as Quentin, with a sudden burst of clarity, jumped in front of her.
"This is not good," he muttered to Lucretia. "This really isn't going to be good."
Lupin was stalking around the tombstone, snapping off pieces of low-lying branches with his mouth.
"What are you doing?"
Lucretia whispered furiously as she peered from behind his back.
"His eyes all glittery. He scared me to death."
"This fucking graveyard's turning him into the wolf. This is what he looks like before it happens,"
Quentin hissed back.
"Don't let him see you." "Who's back there?"
Lupin shouted and came striding up to Quentin.
"Get the hell out of my way."
"No, I'll knock you down."
Lupin gave him the most evil smile Quentin thought he'd ever seen on his face.
"I've got my wand."
"Fuck. Maybe I can get it away from him."
"Try it,"
Lupin said, with another particularly nasty smile. This is just great, Quentin thought furiously. I'm in a damn cursed graveyard with one of the most dangerous wizards in the world, and he wants to fucking kill me. And if he doesn't do it, he will when he turns into a motherfucking werewolf. Oh, but I can't be afraid, because then the godforsaken demons will get me. Excellent. This is bloody excellent. Lupin bared his teeth at him and snarled. Okay, let's get the hell out of here, Quentin hissed to Lucretia. And when she did not move, he shouted, Run! And she turned around and blundered straight into a tree. Quentin started backing up. Damn it, I can't outrun that bastard. Get up here, Metaquilla! Lucretia wailed. And Quentin looked up and saw Lucretia 20 feet above his head in a tree. Good God, how in the fuck did she get up that damn... That wolf can't climb no trees! She shrieked. Get up here, we'll be safe! Fuck! Lupin was clutching one of the tombstones. Fuck! I'll fucking kill you! He snarled, and Lupin saw that his hands were covered with thick brown hair. Yeah! I'm coming up there! Quentin yelled and jumped for the lowest branch. He pulled himself up just as he heard a horrible snapping noise beneath his feet. That wolf gonna bite you! Get up here! Get up! Lucretia screamed, and Quentin yanked himself up the limb so quickly the bark tore through his palms. He was about 15 feet up and balancing his feet precariously on two separate limbs, keeping his arms wrapped around the tree, when he glanced up at a sight that frightened him much more than Lupin. Lucretia's enormous ass and massive legs planted firmly on a tree branch above his head, which was creaking ominously.
For God's sake, wrap your arms around the tree, he shouted at her. Then if you start falling, you can hang on.
Lucretia made a grab for the tree.
I can't! My bosom's too big!
Grab the damn tree!
I can't! My bosom's all squished up!
Quentin looked down and wished he hadn't. The nearly 7-foot-tall wolf was standing up against the tree, its gold eyes burning with bloodlust, emitting horrific growling sounds.
That wolf gonna eat us, Lucretia wailed. He gonna have us for dinner!
Her tree limb snapped, and Quentin had a blurred image of a blue stretch pant-covered ass flying down into his face as the two of them crashed to the ground. This is definitely not going to be good, Quentin thought as he tried unsuccessfully to shove Lucretia off of him. The wolf sprang at them.
Petrificus Totalus!
Arthur Weasley jumped from behind a tombstone, and the wolf froze in midair, landing with a thud on top of Lucretia. Lucretia shrieked. Quentin now had Lucretia and the wolf on top of him and thought he might never breathe again.
For God's sake, get up, he gasped out.
I can't get up. That wolf laying on me.
Arthur pulled the wolf off of her and began binding it up with some silver cord. And Lucretia, to Quentin's immense relief, rolled off of him onto the muddy ground.
Ooh-wee, I ain't never been so scared.
Arthur, Quentin sat up and looked at him in disbelief.
Right here, he replied cheerfully. Perhaps you can help me carry him. He's quite heavy, he said politely. He's stunned. Ought to give us enough time to keep him out of the graveyard.
What the hell are you doing here?
Well, George told me what you were up to. I'd heard a rumor once that this graveyard could make a werewolf transform, even if it wasn't full moon. Thought I'd better come out and see.
Thank you.
Quentin was still giving him a puzzled look.
You certainly handled that well.
Arthur looked at him and smiled.
Thought I was just an old duffer, didn't you? Well, it's always good to be underestimated, Albus used to say.
He started whistling.
I didn't fight in two wars to be scared of a werewolf, even if he is jumping at my throat. Let's go.
By the time they reached the entrance to the graveyard, the wolf had begun struggling and biting on its silver cords. And when Arthur yelled,
Pitch him!
Quentin did not hesitate to obey. The two of them slung him through the entranceway onto the green sunlit earth on the other side.
He'll change back now that he's out of here.
Arthur glanced at Lucretia and Quentin.
Let's go off a bit. He doesn't like anybody around when he's transforming. Embarrassing, you know.
Embarrassing? That fucker almost killed us,
Quentin shouted. Arthur gave Quentin a reproachful look.
Well, it's not his fault, was it? Besides, when he's done transforming, he won't have any clothes on.
Quentin made a horrible face and stomped away.
That's all right, Lucretia said happily. I've seen some of it before in that laundry room. Somebody gotta help him put on some clothes. That ought to be an old woman like me. He won't be embarrassed by no old woman helping him.
Yes, he would, Arthur said sternly, and waved up some clothes as his wand. I've helped him with this before, you know, during the wars.
Lucretia went sulkily off to the side. Quentin was not impressed when Elizabeth began shrieking the moment they all apparated into the den. He and Arthur were dragging Lupin, who was unconscious and deathly pale, with his arms slung around their shoulders.
What happened to him?
She wailed and rushed up, looking frantic.
He's fine, Elizabeth, Arthur said reassuringly. That graveyard made him transform. He always looks like this right after he's turned back. He'll get a bit more color in a few hours. Won't say much for a while, either.
Timothy, who was hovering anxiously in the background, stomped his foot impatiently.
"Did you dig up Malfoy?"
he shouted accusingly at Quentin.
"How did he get all these scratches?"
Elizabeth yelled. "Yeah, Lucretia and I are okay too," Quentin told them. "Don't worry about us."
"He's got a bruise on his arm!"
"He tried to fucking kill us," Quentin shouted. "We had to climb up a damn tree. Lucretia fell on top of me, and then he fell on her."
"Did you dig him up? Where's the DNA?"
Timothy shrieked. "Can you bloody well hear me? He turned into the damn werewolf, and we got the fuck out of the graveyard. There wasn't any time to dig him up," Quentin barked out, and Timothy glared at him horribly.
"He looks awful. Can't you lie him down on that couch, Arthur?"
Elizabeth wailed.
"Yes, and don't worry about us," Lucretia scowled at Elizabeth. "We fine, just fine. Mr. Quiller done got jumped on by them demons and sucked down in a grave, and Mr. Lupin scared us to death, but don't you be worrying yourself none about us."
"Oh, give me a washcloth,"
Elizabeth yelled, and Quentin and Lucretia exchanged furious glances.
"Now I knows why you don't like her,"
Lucretia mumbled darkly as she stomped off into the kitchen.
"How did he get this cut on his ear?"
"Probably when we pitched him out of the graveyard," Arthur replied cheerfully. He had just helped himself to a glass of butter beer when sprawled out on the couch.
"You just pitched him out?"
Elizabeth screamed accusingly at Quentin.
"Yes, we pitched him out," he shouted. "I suppose we should have let him bite through the fucking cords and rip our bloody throats out."
Elizabeth pouted a bit at this.
Well, that would have been awful."
"Thank you,"
Quentin replied in a mortally offended tone.
"He would have felt so terrible if he'd hurt anybody. He probably would have killed himself."
Quentin gave Arthur a disbelieving look, but Arthur just smiled.
"Might as well give it up, old chap."
Timothy, meanwhile, was stomping about in circles, apparently too angry to speak.
"You should have let me go," he finally shouted. "I would have dug him up. Now I'm never going to know."
"Don't upset yourself," Quentin snapped at Timothy. "I'm not hurt at all. And for God's sake, don't feel guilty that I almost got killed trying to dig up some dead fucker for you in a cursed graveyard."
Timothy flung himself dramatically on the floor, and Lupin opened his eyes for a moment.
"Why do you have to scare me to death?"
Elizabeth shrieked, and he shut them again. Smart move, Quentin thought to himself.
"He's going to feel really bad about this," Elizabeth shouted at Quentin and Lucretia. "And it wasn't his fault. Don't you two dare make him feel bad about it."
"No, I don't need a drink, Elizabeth, thank you," Quentin replied calmly. "Don't go to any trouble."
Elizabeth burst into tears, and Lucretia immediately began patting on her.
"Now there, don't you be crying, honey. He gonna be fine. You can't get yourself all fussed up. You go upstairs and rest, and Mr. Quiller, he stay right here with him until he wake up,"
she clucked soothingly.
"What?" Quentin shouted. "I've got damn concussion, and I think you broke my fucking wrist. I'm supposed to babysit his ass after he tried to kill me."
"I'm not leaving him," Elizabeth shrieked defiantly and pulled a large pillow to the floor and sat down by his head. "I'm sleeping right here," she added stubbornly. "You all go home."
Weezer, apparently attracted by the agreeable sounds of angry shouting, slithered into the room and beamed at the sight of Lupin in his dreadful state.
"Master is hurt," he moaned happily. "Oh, Master is hurt. Perhaps Master will die this time. The shame of the filthy werewolf will—"
"Shut up!" Timothy yelled from the floor, and Weezer turned on him angrily.
"Nasty little blood traitor," he hissed. "Scourge on the honor of the most ancient and noble house of Black. As vile as—"
"What?"
Arthur said sharply. Weezer clapped a hand over his mouth.
"Don't do any good to climb up," Arthur told him sternly. "Soon as Remus comes round, and he will, so don't get yourself excited, he'll ask you and you'll have to tell him. And I'll be sure to let him know how uncooperative you were."
Weezer began screeching and banging his head on the floor, and Quentin and Elizabeth gave Arthur extremely puzzled looks.
"House elf always recognizes a member of the family they've served," he told them calmly. "Always. They've a different kind of magic, you know." "And Remus didn't know this," Quentin shouted. "Are you telling me we went to that motherfucking graveyard for nothing?"
Arthur closed his eyes. Apparently, he was beginning to find Quentin a bit tiresome.
"Certainly he knew it," he replied and yawned. "I don't suppose he thought of it. I can't imagine Weezer was foremost in his mind. He was probably looking forward to digging Malfoy up anyway," he chuckled. "Weezer knew he was from a pure-blood family," Quentin frowned. "Called him a filthy blood traitor the night Malfoy showed up for dinner."
"How would you know that if you didn't know what family he came from?"
He glared down at Weezer, who promptly gave him a defiant look.
"Now!"
Arthur pulled out his wand and Weezer let out a shriek.
"Is Timothy Black, or is he not? I'll blast off your leg!"
he added threateningly.
"Apparently he's not a member of SPEW," Elizabeth whispered to Quentin.
"Yes!"
Weezer spat out so vituperatively it seemed he had actually vomited the word.
"And as foul and despicable an example as I've ever seen since his father! I knew it!"
Timothy shrieked delightedly and flung his arms around Weezer's skinny neck and hugged him.
"Sirius was my dad! He was a marauder! Now I have a name! He was in the Order! There's the best day ever!"
"Of course it is," Quentin replied disgustedly. "I can't remember a better one. Pack of damned Dementors showed up, and demons rolled round on me, and that fucking bloody werewolf chased my ass up a tree, and it was for no purpose whatsoever. Don't let it concern you, though."
"That's right," Lucretia sniffed and gave Timothy a dark look. "Don't be worrying that I done squashed on my bosoms and had a wolf fall on me and scare me to death. I reckon I guess over it."
"Can you prove it?" Timothy yelled at Arthur. "Will the ministry take his word and change my name and say I'm really his kid?"
"Certainly they will," Arthur smiled at him fondly. "That's the Court of Adoptions and Legalizations of Birth Status. Dean Thomas is in charge there. I'll owl him and see what needs to be done."
He started scratching out a note with a quill pen and hurried over to Hestia.
"Cookie baking is the day after tomorrow," Quentin told Elizabeth in a surprisingly agreeable tone. "I thought I'd invite you to."
Elizabeth appeared rather surprised at this.
"Well, I do like cookie baking," she admitted, "and Remus hasn't ever done it."
"I think he's familiar with the table, though."
Elizabeth tried to frown at him, but did not meet with much success.
"Oh, it'll be fun," she said finally. "I actually liked living there at Christmas."
"Good, then I'll expect you at the traditional events, just as always," Quentin replied sternly, and glanced at her again.
She was sitting rather awkwardly on the floor in her long white nightgown, picking pieces of dirt out of Lupin's hair.
"Get off that floor," he barked. "I'll carry his ass upstairs."
"Thank you,"
Elizabeth replied in a bemused voice, and gave him a smile. Timothy jumped about excitedly in front of the window until Hestia returned, and could scarcely contain himself from ripping the parchment out of Arthur's hands.
"Excellent," Arthur smiled as he read. "You can go there tomorrow with Weezer. He wrote Harry as well and asked him to check the Black Family Tapestry. Apparently your name's on it now. I guess it has to be publicly known to show up. Anyway, Harry's sending an official letter to the Ministry to confirm it."
"When can I go?"
"Well," Arthur replied thoughtfully, "Remus won't be up to it tomorrow." "I'll take you. Be ready at 10.
Timothy flung his arms around Arthur's waist.
"Thank you," he wailed. "Thank you. I never thought this would happen. Now I've got a name and I know who I am."
Arthur smiled at him and ruffled his hair.
"That isn't all you've got," he said affectionately. "Dean looked over Sirius's will. He had a codicil that names Remus's godfather of any child of his discovered after his death. Dean said he'll take care of that tomorrow, too."
Quentin came back down the stairs and found Timothy staring into space like a zombie.
"I have a father and a godfather," Timothy whispered in a mesmerized voice. "And they're both marauders."
"Imagine that," Quentin replied. "What a shocking surprise."